This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The 44th annual Texas Folklife Festival arrives this weekend, bringing with it 40 cultural groups, all celebrating their diverse traditions. Among the varied exhibitors are several who maintain old customs of a bygone era. Blacksmithing and traditional bread making are two of the most popular exhibitions at the festival, with crowds three deep observing their intricate demonstrations. So what is it about the old patterns of life and their customs that intrigue us still today? Why continue to learn these, some would say, antiquated techniques? And what are your favorite parts of folk life? Call in. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. Our guest this afternoon is Jerry Ochterberg. He is a San Antonio area blacksmith. And Leslie Ellison, he's with the San Antonio Loafers. They're not just going to be sitting around. They're going to be traditional bread bakers. And James Benavides, he's with the Institute of Texan Cultures. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all.
Hey, thank
David. Thank you.
So I'm really intrigued with the traditional bread makers. What is that, Leslie?
Well, we just mix flour and yeast, salt, sugar, all the ingredients that go into making a simple loaf of bread. We mix it right there in front of people and show them how it works and mix it good. But then there's a kneading. The kneading is different than the mixing. You have to knead it and push it and pull it and stretch it and bend it over to make it the yeast and the gluten work together. And then you let it rise. And you have to be a patient person in order to wait for it to rise the right amount before you proceed.
So is this the way that the pioneers made bread?
Well, some of them did. Some of them made bread that was more like biscuits, and they that's because that's a lot faster. You don't have to wait for the yeast to rise. But those that created a bowl of sourdough that they could carry along, they could let it rise. It would be sort of something like a yeast bread today.
Because today when we think of sourdough as a nice exotic bread to enjoy, maybe something you would pick up in San Francisco or something. But actually, sourdough was the typical bread of the era for the pioneers, because getting a good yeast was very difficult to
yes.
do.
Yes, and to get sourdough, there are many ways to do it, but one way you can do it is just mix up a little bit of flour and water in a sort of a syrupy liquid and let it sit in a bowl for a day or two, and the bacteria from the air gets in there and spoils it or makes it ferment.
Right.
And if you're lucky, you'll get a good fermentation mix, and you can mix it then with a little bit of more flour and other ingredients and have a bread that's pretty tasty.
And so the bread that we have today is actually a new contrivance with the availability of this yeast.
Yes, yeast and sourdough mix today are very carefully controlled by the chemists that know what they're doing.
Sure.
So it's a different world today.
Right. And so, blacksmithing, being a blacksmith, a smithy, Jerry, you are out, are you with the hammer and the anvil and the fire and all that?
Absolutely, as traditional as it is, the same way it was 300 years ago, we strive to keep it that way. I'm past president of the Texas Artist Blacksmith Association and current president of Balcones Forge, which is a Central Texas group. We have about 125 members who are active blacksmiths.
That's a lot of guys out there.
We see more.
Is it a hobby or is it a business?
To each his own. It's a passion for some people. A lot of people have blacksmith shops. They are working blacksmiths. We call ourselves artist blacksmiths today. The working blacksmith is pretty much a bygone thing. At one time, I think in the early 70s, they estimated that there were 500 working blacksmiths in the United States, and there's probably like 15,000 today because people are coming back to the craft. It is an art that we want to keep alive, and our mission is to keep this alive and to pass it on so it doesn't die on the vine.
I see a lot of YouTube videos about blacksmithing, mainly about making swords and medieval weapons and things. You know, but there seems to be a passion online to learn and pass on this information.
There is. A lot of the younger folks, they love the swords, the armor.
Do you make that?
No. I do make knives, and I have made some prop swords. I have not made a usable sword yet. I'm more into the colonial blacksmith items. Texas, in San Antonio, this is such a rich history with the Alamo, the missions here. We can do things as they did in the early 1700s, reproduce them. It's an artifact that we can make today as it was in the past.
Are you frequently called upon to recreate something from the pioneer era for restoration purposes?
Absolutely. I just finished about a couple of months ago a brand from the Vidari Ranch in South Texas for the Institute of Texan Cultures. It's now in the Los Tejanos exhibit. It's a hands-on item that people can pick up.
And so this is the brand that you would stick in the coals in order to mark your cattle or something.
Absolutely, it's all traditionally built. We weld in the fire. The fire will get up to 2,000 degrees, and it is a firm bonded weld. So this is how they would have done it the same way 300 years ago.
And how hard is it for a person or to get into, decide, I want to become a blacksmith and want to enter into this as, you know, as an interest of mine? How do you get started?
They can join our group or come watch us at any of our events. We're at many locations, Texas Folklife being one of our biggest. The Balcones meets once a month, usually on the last Saturday of the month, Balcones Forge. And it's open to the public. We're a 501(c). Dues are like $20 a year.
Wow. And so, but what kind of equipment would it take for a person to get started?
People can start with just a hammer and a piece of rail iron, anything. I've been on a piece of railroad track for about 5 years before I found a good used anvil.
Oh, really? And so, but what about the building of the forge and the fire, you know, that the fire pit?
We go back to the YouTubes. There's brake drum forges that can be built in a day.
And so, and use the brake drum to do what?
It houses your coal, and then you'd need a source, an air source, a hair dryer, or some type of blower to blow up through these coals, and that's really all you need.
So you really can MacGyver your way into becoming a blacksmith.
Absolutely. And the fun part is making your own tools, making your own hammers, your own tongs, as they would 300, 400 years ago.
And you get a certain amount of satisfaction from using your own arms and your hands and creating something.
Oh, you're proud of that first piece.
Hey, look what I made. I'm going to take this to the office. All right, we're going to keep talking about what you can find at the Folklife Festival. It's going to be this weekend. We'll get into some of the logistics and other new things that are going to be happening at the festival. What are your favorite parts of Folklife? What are your great memories of going to Folklife as a kid or taking your own kids? Call in. We want to hear these stories. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. This weekend, the Folklife Festival returns to the Hemisphere Grounds at the Institute of Texan Cultures. We're talking with some of the artisans who were there. Also, James Benavides, he is with the Institute of Texan Cultures. So, James, what else can we look forward to at the with Folklife?
Well, it's always an awesome event. There's so many cultures coming. And one of the new things we're doing this year, Kids Cultural Corner. I mean, this is one for the family. This is the opportunity to get your kids to the festival and hands-on. So you want to join a drum circle, for instance. There is a drummer there with an array of instruments that everybody can join in on. There are cultural dances to learn. There are crafts to get hands-on experience with. So aside from that specific area, you know, you can always visit the artisans for your hands-on opportunities.
Looking at the weather forecast, 50% chance of showers on Saturday and Sunday. So what happens if it rains?
Well, we'll do a rain or shine. You know, there is a...
I mean, 50% chance of sunshine as well, you know.
Well, fair enough. But, you know, if worst comes to worst, we'll do
so it will go on, rain or shine.
It's a rain or shine event.
And you can go and still have a lot of fun and some of the things just don't get rained out. What happens if it rains on the blacksmith area? Does that put you out of business?
No, well, for a time or so, we may have to run undercover. Don't let our fire go out, but we're right back at it. We have tarps to cover everything up.
Okay, and Leslie, at the with the bread baking that you make, is it use a certain oven? Is it an old-time oven?
There's an old oven that we use. It used to belong to a city public service, and they donated it to the Institute, and it gets hauled out there each year. It runs on propane. One of its two ovens works, and it's still we keep our fingers crossed, but it's we can put about 20 cans of bread in there at one
cans
time.
Cans of bread.
We use steel coffee cans, 1 pound steel coffee cans, in which to bake our bread because we can make better use of the vertical space in the oven. And if we bake it each can once it's risen properly for 40 minutes at about 350. But sometimes we have to turn the oven up a little or down a little because the thermostat doesn't always cooperate with us. But we monitor it carefully. But we are under a tent, so if it rains, we're fine.
So when people see you making bread and then they say, I've tried to make bread, I just can't do it, I mean, what do you tell them?
Well, I talk with them about what they did. Sometimes it's a matter they're too busy and rushed. They want it to rise quickly. You have, as Orson Welles used to say about wine, we'll serve no wine before it's time. We'll serve no bread before it rises properly. And sometimes the warmth of the water or the milk, the liquid, has to be warm enough but not too warm. You can kill the yeast by making it the water or milk too hot. And so we talk with them about the proper temperature for that, and just discuss what they might try again. But people get a little bit scared off or impatient. But you do have to be patient to enjoy the smell of good bread baking.
And are you making a certain type of bread?
It's a very plain, simple country bread. We make it in two different ways. We make it one just all white flour, white wheat flour. And the other way, we mix about one-third or one-half of it to be whole wheat and the other half white as a mixture. But it's a very simple one, just salt, sugar, yeast, a bit of oil and water and flour, and that's it.
Well, our Texan settlers probably ate more cornbread than they did eat flour bread. Do you make cornbread?
We haven't been using cornbread because that's an entirely different process, and I've made it at home a few times just for fun, but we don't normally do that out there. We stick to the wheat flour. Whole wheat and white flour.
And so let me ask you, Jerry, with blacksmithing, what is the most intricate thing that you've made? What is your pride, your big thing?
I'm going to say
the magnus opus.
I was very proud of the brand I did for the Institute. I did put a lot of hours into it. I guess the most intricate piece was a Spanish writing bit that's now on display at Mission San Jose behind the glass. A lot of hours went into it.
So this is the riding bit that would go in the mouth of the horse.
Right. Very ornate
bridle
cheek pieces. I duplicated an artifact that was there, so it had to be down to the millimeter.
Okay, and so what made that so complicated? Because it was so precise and new for you?
The ornateness of it. There was lots of chiseling. Lots of designs. The scalloping on the round cheek pieces was just incredible.
So when I imagine, you know, as a blacksmith, you're shoving the pieces of iron into the fire, and you got the blower going, trying to get the coals as hot as you can to make the iron, malleable, and
yes.
Then you start hammering it and shaping it the way you want it to be.
Yes,
and then you plunge it into water to cool it off. Is that it?
Only when you're through. When we're totally through forging and planishing is easing the sharp edges to make it look or feel comfortable in the hand, then we'll quench it.
Okay.
The big thing we'll do at Folklife is make nails for the kids. Or if someone wants to get in that fire with us, I say get in the fire too.
What do you mean get in the fire with you?
to actually make a nail, an old square nail. We've probably made enough nails to build a small house, okay, maybe an outhouse, but a lot of nails. And this is something the kids can take home with them. And the look on their faces when they're through that, this is actually something they helped make or something they could watch and take away from the festival.
Yeah, a real artifact of their experience. Yes. Let me get a caller on the air if you want to join our conversation. We'd love to hear from you. What memories do you have of Folk Life? What do you look forward to when you go to Folk Life each year? The number is 210-614-8980, and Shanna has called in. Shanna, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey, you're on the air.
I was calling to share my favorite Folk Life memory. My father actually used to blacksmith with Jerry, and my favorite memory was when they would brand Professor Krachenhammer every year.
Oh, that was cool.
Professor Katzenhammer.
Yes. Jim Galish, which is Shauna's dad, would make a miniature brand, and it would be won by picked by Professor Katzenhammer. And his lederhosen, his leather lederhosen, would get branded every year in front of the crowd.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. Y'all still do that? Shanna, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. Thanks for your memory. Y'all still do that? Is that going to be something?
The professor more or less retired a few years ago. He still comes to visit us, but we don't brand him anymore.
That sounds a little, you know, I wonder about your liability over there for that.
He may have a scar or two.
So it seems like, you know, you have a lot of people coming back year after year, watching you do these things. And they look forward to it. I noticed when you are doing, don't you get a lot of scars, you know, bits and pieces flying off, hitting you on the skin?
You can wear gloves, long sleeves, as you should, but a lot of times it's just too hot. And they're minor. A lot of people, they're small burns. The bread makers, I'm sure you've been burned a few times.
Yes.
So I don't know an electrician that hasn't been shocked.
Or a beekeeper and hadn't gotten stung.
Yes, sir.
All right, but so what's the biggest mistake that a first-timer, a beginner, would make and something to avoid?
Working in the sunlight, trying to judge the color of your metal to forge, it needs to be from a dark red all the way to a bright yellow. Anything past that, they'll burn it up in the forge. It goes past the melting temperature.
So, and you mean in the sunlight? If you're out in the sunlight, you can't...
You can't judge the color.
Okay.
And once you lose your color, you need to go back into the forge. The old saying is the devil will get you for hitting black iron, which means you'll die trying to move metal that's not hot or not at a forging temperature.
Okay. So, James Benavides, what are some of the music acts you're going to be having at the Folk Life?
Well, I'm really looking forward to Saturday night and Sunday night myself. Saturday night, it's going to be Augie Myers, my friend.
So, wow.
There's some good old Texas for you. So definitely looking forward to Augie. And Ruben V's got Sunday night, so that's definitely going to be a good time. Personally, you know, I like hearing the bagpipes drone across the festival grounds at opening and closing both days. I'm a fan of our Celtic stage or, you know, the little it's this little grape arbor stage on the way up to the back 40. Mm-hmm. And you'll get your Celtic music and your old Spanish corridos, the folk music. And, you know, it's just this great little spot there at the Institute. And just sit back with your dinner, whatever you manage to find there on the ground, some wonderful dishes, and just sit back, rest, and listen to these old, great tunes.
So, Leslie, how did you get started at the Folk Life with the bread baking?
Well, just two or three years after the festival started, in the mid-70s, someone who had attended the festival told me about the bread baking, and she knew I was interested in bread baking at home. I did some... I had been baking bread for many years in one way, and I got acquainted with these retired doctors, Army doctors, and one was a scientist, and they started the thing at the beginning of the festival, and the next year I worked with them and just had a wonderful time. Back then we were on 4 days, Thursday through Sunday, and it was really a wonderful learning experience, but these men helped us, learn how to talk with people who are interested in bread but had not had much success.
And Jerry, how did you get started?
With Folk Life?
Yes, sir.
Some of the premier blacksmiths in the area invited me many years ago. Al Morgan was one of the first in the area, and I think he was at the first Folklife. It was just a joy to come down and work with him, to watch the people in action.
And you get people walking up to you, tell them, I'm a blacksmith, I know what you're doing, here's, you know, you talk shop.
Absolutely, yes. They're the people that have seen it, that have helped do it, the wannabes come, and we are the source. If anybody wants to pick up this as a hobby or business, they can come talk to us at Folklife.
And you're saying that it is a business. You can make a living from doing this.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes, good.
A lot of horses needing bridles.
Probably not. We are, you know, maybe a bridle. We don't do horses per se. Horseshoeing is another science to itself. The farriers will take care of the horses. I can take a horseshoe and make anything out of it, but I will not shoe a horse.
So how do you make a living out of being a blacksmith? What's your income from?
You'd really have to have your clientele, the custom home builders that would like to see your work, fireplace cranes, door grills.
Just really ornamental things,
very
creating
ornamental
items for a house that's going to look like a traditional Texas homestead.
Or a Spanish colonial, or right, even an American colonial.
All right. And so, James, what do people need to know about Folklife?
Well, Saturday, we're going to go 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., Sunday, noon to 7. Ticket details at texancultures.com. You can go online to get your tickets. We want to make it easy for you to get there, so hit the Crossroads Park and Ride with Via, and no problem whatsoever. We'll get you downtown and out to the festival grounds.
And the ticket prices?
Adult at the gate 10, at the gate 12, advance 10. Child 5 at the gate, 5 advance. The tickets are at texancultures.com or your HEBs. There are downloadables. They're on the site for the menu, the schedule.
Folklife Festival, it's this weekend, rain or shine. This is The Source on KSTX.